look at the screen in front of you.
Yeah.
Because right now, behind that glass, your operating system is tracking your keystrokes. It's managing billions of memory pathways and deciding exactly what parts of your digital life to feed into an AI model.
It's constantly working.
Exactly. I mean, it's 2026. The OS isn't just background noise anymore. It is the fundamental lens through which you interact with machine learning, protect your privacy, and, you know, actually get your work done.
Right. It defines everything you do on a computer now.
So today we're doing a deep dive into this massive, heavily detailed architectural analysis. It's from Teking Game Lab, and it's titled The 2026 Operating System Battle, Mac versus Windows versus Linux.
Authored by systems architect Majid Gorbaninjad.
That's a
phenomenal paper.
Oh, it's incredibly thorough. And our mission today is to extract the definitive guide from this huge architectural deep dive so you know exactly which OS fits the physical reality of your life right now. Okay, let's unpack this. Because the 2026 landscape, it has some familiar shadows, but there is one massive structural earthquake.
Yeah, the baseline is that Windows 12 still absolutely commands the high ground in gaming and enterprise. They hold roughly two-thirds of the global desktop market.
Still heavyweight.
Still the heavyweight. And then you have Apple's Mac OS 16, which is running on their new M5 silicon, and they have aggressively cornered the market on absolute energy efficiency. But like you said, the tectonic shift, that's happening with Linux.
The shocker.
It really is. We are seeing a historic 3.69% desktop market share for Linux.
Wow.
Which, when you do the math, translates to a $10.73 billion market value.
That is wild for something that used to just be for, like, server rooms and hardcore geeks.
Exactly.
So to understand how Linux climbed out of the server room and onto that many personal desks, or, you know, how Windows and Mac are cementing their leads, we have to look at the raw physical architecture.
Yeah.
Because these three platforms, they are processing AI entirely differently at the silicon level.
They really are. Let's look at Apple's approach first, right?
Yeah.
The M5 chip and Mac OS 16, they are betting everything on vertical integration and this thing called a unified memory architecture.
UMA.
Right, UMA. So instead of thinking about computer memory like a sprawling warehouse where the processor and the graphics card have to constantly dispatch delivery trucks back and forth across the motherboard to get data.
Which takes time.
Exactly. It introduces latency.
Mm-hmm.
UMA puts the CPU and the GPU at the exact same desk. They are looking at the exact same filing cabinet simultaneously.
Okay, so that structural intimacy, that means zero data duplication, right?
Zero. You eliminate the physical latency of copying data between components. And that results in these ridiculous millisecond response times. And Apple leverages that physical speed to power their private cloud computing philosophy.
Which is their big marketing push right now.
Right. Because Apple Intelligence 3.0 is embedded at the kernel level. It processes complex machine learning tasks entirely locally on the M5's neural engine.
So they aren't offloading your queries to some remote server farm.
No. The silicon on your physical desk is doing the heavy lifting in real time.
Which is a stark contrast to Microsoft's layout with Windows 12.
Very stark.
Because they built this modular core, dubbed NT 11.0, to try and untangle decades of legacy code, basically separating the core OS from the user interface. But when it comes to AI, Windows is inherently a hybrid beast.
It relies heavily on dedicated NPUs, neural processing units.
Right. And the baseline requirement for their Copilot Plus system is an NPU capable of at least 40 TOPS.
Yeah. And just to clarify for everyone, TOPS stands for trillions of operations per second.
Right.
40 is sort of this magic threshold where an OS can run continuous background AI models like audio noise suppression or real-time text generation without cannibalizing your main processor.
So your whole system doesn't just stutter and freeze up.
Exactly. But because Windows 12 bridges local NPU processing with vast cloud resources, it's constantly negotiating.
Mm-hmm.
It's asking, you know, what do I process on this laptop and what do I send up to Microsoft's Azure servers?
And then you drop into Linux, specifically running kernel 6.17. The Taking Game Report highlights its aggressive modularity. Like, there is no mandated AI background service.
None. It's a completely blank foundation.
Right. You bolt on exactly what you want. If you need a local large language model, you just install Llama. If you need speech to text, you compile Whisper.
And the underlying file systems really reflect this philosophy of ultimate user control. Linux environments now standardize on file systems like ZFS and BTRFs.
Which have instant snapshots.
Yes. And to understand why that's so revolutionary for a desktop user, think about how older file systems work. When you save a change to a file, The system physically overwrites the old data on your hard drive.
Right. The old data is gone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But VFS uses a copy-on-write mechanism. When you alter a file, it writes the new data to an entirely empty block on the drive first, and it only updates the directory map once that new write is completely successful.
So the old data remains perfectly intact. Which means, like, if a bad system update breaks your computer, or you accidentally delete a critical folder, you just hit a button and instantly roll back to the exact state your computer was in 3 minutes ago.
It's incredible. It's essentially time travel built into the hard drive's physics.
That is so cool. I feel like we need a good analogy to visualize these three approaches.
Go for it.
Okay, think of it like real estate. Apple is a luxury gated community. Everything is provided. It's beautiful. It's hyper secure.
Yeah.
But you absolutely cannot change the paint color on your house.
That's spot on.
Right. And then Linux is like building your own off-grid cabin. You design it exactly how you want it.
Yeah.
But you're chopping your own wood.
Yeah. You have to do the work.
And Windows is this bustling, fully furnished, high-rise condo. It's got all the amenities. But the landlord is constantly looking over your shoulder to see what you're doing.
That is a perfect transition, that nosy landlord analogy.
Mm.
Because this architectural divergence,
yeah,
it directly dictates how these systems treat your personal data.
Yeah.
Because they process machine learning so differently, their data collection models are just fundamentally opposed.
Especially with Windows. I mean, let's talk about Windows 12's recall 2.0 feature, because that was hugely controversial.
It was a nightmare from a PR perspective initially. The mechanism basically takes a constant stream of snapshots capturing your screen activity every 5 seconds.
Every 5 seconds.
Yeah. And it feeds all that through a local optical character recognition model to build a deeply searchable chronological database of literally everything you have ever seen or typed.
But wait, let me play devil's advocate here. Because on the surface, isn't that exactly what we've been asking AI to do? I mean, isn't that the holy grail of a digital assistant?
I mean,
like the sci-fi dream. Where you can just ask your computer, hey, find that recipe for chili I was looking at last Tuesday. And the system just magically pulls it up. It remembers your life so you don't have to.
Well, the convenience is undeniable. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
But the security mechanism creates an unprecedented vulnerability.
Right.
The source material dives deep into this. Even though Microsoft mandates local encryption for this database, and they made the feature opt-in by default after all the backlash.
Thankfully.
Yeah, thankfully. But the sheer existence of a chronological plain text searchable index of your entire digital life fundamentally alters your threat modeling.
Because if someone gets in.
Exactly.
Hmm.
If a bad actor or some sophisticated malware bypasses that initial encryption layer, they don't just steal the files currently sitting on your desktop. They'd extract a perfect photographic memory of your banking sessions, your disappearing encrypted messages, every password you typed on screen.
Oh, wow. That is terrifying when you put it like that.
It is. A hybrid cloud assistant inherently requires a vast reservoir of telemetry to function. And that fundamentally breaks the core tenet of data minimization. Not to mention, Windows 12 mandates a Microsoft account for non-enterprise users, heavily integrating cloud subscription prompts directly into the OS.
Right. It basically treats your attention and your data as part of the product.
Yeah.
Which stands in total contrast to the Linux philosophy. They operate on zero telemetry.
Zero. By default, the Linux kernel and its core utilities are programmed to send absolutely no packets of data back to any corporate server, unless you explicitly configure them to.
And because it's open source, people would know if they did.
Exactly. A global community of security engineers is constantly auditing it. But it goes deeper. That ZFS snapshot feature we talked about enables an immutable OS architecture.
Explain that for us, because that's a huge selling point in 2026.
So an immutable operating system locks the core system files into a read-only state. The operating system's brain is physically separated from the files you interact with daily.
Okay.
So if you inadvertently download a piece of aggressive malware, that malicious code simply lacks the right permissions to embed itself into the system directory.
It just hits a brick wall.
A literal brick wall. A standard reboot flushes the temporary memory, wiping the infection out entirely. It's structural defense, stopping the execution at the physics level rather than relying on some antivirus scanner to reactively catch it.
Which is brilliant. And then Apple kind of sits in this fascinating middle ground, right? Because they use a dedicated piece of silicon called the Secure Enclave, which works with their File Vault 2 encryption.
Yeah, and their encryption keys never leave the hardware, meaning not even Apple engineers can remote into your machine and read your files.
But the report notes a really interesting point here. Apple has effectively positioned privacy as a luxury commodity.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, you get this ironclad data protection without needing, you know, a degree in computer science to configure an immutable Linux file system. But you have to pay a massive financial premium upfront for their proprietary hardware to get it.
Exactly. You're buying your way into privacy.
Mm-hmm.
So we've established that Linux is this locked-down, privacy-first fortress, and Windows is a bustling, interconnected data hub. The natural assumption is that the lockdown system would really struggle with chaotic, resource-heavy tasks.
Like gaming.
Like modern gaming. Yet the performance metrics for 2026 show a massive upset.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Let's analyze the gaming and productivity battlefield. Because Windows 12 is still the heavyweight champion here, it maintains over 99% native compatibility with the Steam library.
It's massive. And Microsoft integrated their GameCore technology, which essentially homogenizes the architecture between the Xbox console and the PC.
Right.
This includes deep integration of DirectX 12 Ultimate features, specifically Direct Storage, which is huge.
Walk us through Direct Storage, because that blew my mind in the report.
Okay, so in traditional architecture, when a game needs to load a massive 4K texture, the data moves from the hard drive through the CPU for decompression and then over to the graphics card.
It's taking the scenic route.
Yeah, and it creates bottlenecks. Direct Storage creates a high-speed bypass, the compressed data route straight from your NVMe SSD directly to the GPU's memory. It bypasses the processor entirely.
Which basically eliminates loading screens.
Virtually eliminates them, yeah. And it boosts modern game frame rates by up to 20%.
So Windows is incredibly optimized, but Linux is the absolute shocker here. I mean, running 88% of the entire Steam library flawlessly. That's insane.
It really is. And it is entirely due to Valve's Proton compatibility layer.
Right, and we should clarify, a compatibility layer is not an emulator.
No, no. An emulator pretends to be an entire hardware system, which is incredibly slow. Proton is a real-time translator. When a Windows game tries to speak to the graphics card using Microsoft's proprietary DirectX language,
Proton intercepts that command.
Exactly. It intercepts it and translates it instantly into Vulkan, which is an open-source graphics API that Linux understands natively.
And the craziest part of the report is that this translation happens with virtually zero performance overhead.
None.
Ooh.
In fact, because a Linux environment doesn't dedicate system resources to running background telemetry or ad services or AI indexing.
The nosy landlord stuff.
Right. Because that's gone. Some native Windows games actually achieve higher frame rates and better pacing on Linux.
Which is why SteamOS 4.0 has become the absolute standard for modern handheld gaming consoles.
Yes.
Meanwhile, macOS 16 is just languishing at around 35% gaming compatibility. I mean, Apple introduced Metal 4 and their game porting toolkit 3.0 to help developers translate code, but the raw mechanical power isn't the issue, is it?
No, it's a deeply entrenched financial loop. AAA developers simply won't spend the capital to rewrite their rendering engines for Mac because there aren't enough gamers on the platform.
And gamers refuse to adopt Mac hardware because the massive blockbusters aren't there.
It's a catch-22. But if we pivot from consuming software to building it the developer ecosystem, it is a completely different story.
Oh, absolutely. The OS is a developer's primary tool belt. And in 2026, Linux is the definitive paradise for back-end engineers, DevOps, and machine learning researchers.
Because NVIDIA and AMD drivers have matured so extensively in the open source space, developers have raw, unrestricted access to the GPU's video RAM.
Which is crucial.
It's everything. When you are training a local AI model or compiling massive code bases written in Rust, that direct metal access matters. The report notes compilation speeds are routinely 15 to 30% faster on Linux compared to Windows.
And the containerization performance. It's night and day.
Oh, Docker. Yeah.
Modern development relies heavily on Docker containers. For those who don't know, a container is essentially an isolated mini environment that packages an application with all the exact software dependencies it needs to run. So a developer knows it will work perfectly on any server.
And because Docker shares the Linux kernel natively, spinning up a complex container takes about 0.8 seconds.
0.8 seconds. Yeah.
On Windows, because it has to boot up a virtual machine to translate the Linux commands, that exact same container takes 3.5 seconds.
Which sounds like nothing, but when you do that 100 times a day,
the friction adds up rapidly. Now, Windows does attempt to mitigate this with WSL3, the Windows subsystem for Linux, which creates a highly integrated Linux environment inside Windows. It's a powerful compromise, but it still introduces virtualization overhead.
It does. Mac, however, maintains an unbreakable monopoly in one specific sector.
Mobile development.
Yes. If you want to compile and publish an application for an iPhone, Apple's licensing dictates that you must use Xcode, and Xcode only runs on macOS.
Therefore, every iOS developer on the planet is forced to own a Mac. Though, to be fair to the hardware, the M5 chip delivers a 24-hour battery life under heavy compiling loads. That's a massive structural advantage if you're coding on the move. It really is. But this brings us to a glaring contradiction in the Linux ecosystem.
Okay, lay it on me.
If the Proton layer can seamlessly translate DirectX to Vulkan, and Linux can compile code faster while operating leaner, why hasn't it completely decimated Windows in the desktop gaming sector?
That is the million-dollar question, and the source actually answers this perfectly. If Proton is practically magic, what's the roadblock? It's not rendering graphics. It is the kernel-level anti-cheat engines.
Yep. The esports scene.
Exactly. Games with massive competitive scenes, like Valorant or League of Legends, they utilize aggressive proprietary software, like Riot's Vanguard, to ensure players aren't using aimbots.
And those programs demand absolute root access to the deepest, most privileged layer of the operating system, the kernel. They want to monitor every single process running in memory.
And this directly clashes with the fundamental architecture of Linux.
Completely. As we discussed with the immutable file systems, the Linux architecture inherently distrusts third-party software. The kernel is heavily walled off.
Right.
Even if a user desperately wants to grant an anti-cheat engine deep access just to prove they aren't hacking, the Linux system simply doesn't have a standardized door built into that wall for proprietary closed-source software to hook into.
So consequently, professional competitive gamers are effectively locked out of Linux. They must use Windows.
They have no choice.
So we have these incredibly distinct use cases carved out. Windows is the unyielding anchor for enterprise integration and competitive gaming. Mac is the walled garden for creatives and mobile developers. Linux is the high-performance laboratory for back-end systems and privacy advocates.
Which naturally leads us to the hidden costs, because these specific workflows carry massive downstream effects for your wallet.
And the global supply chain, honestly. Let's look at the Tech and Game Lab's breakdown of the total cost of ownership, or TCO, over a standard 3-year life cycle.
Because evaluating TCO requires looking past the initial retail price, right? You have to analyze the compounding costs of software licenses, mandatory subscriptions, hardware depreciation.
And the structural longevity of the machine itself.
Exactly. I actually like to think of this like buying a printer.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Right. So let's run the numbers on Mac first. The 3-year TCO is calculated at roughly $1,500. It's the highest upfront cost. An M5 MacBook Air starts around $1,199. And remember that unified memory we praised earlier?
UMA. It has a massive financial downside. Everything is physically soldered directly onto the logic board. If your workload expands and you need more RAM, you cannot open the machine and install a new stick. You have to buy an entirely new computer.
But because the hardware is so tightly controlled, it retains an impressive 70% of its resale value on the secondary market after 3 years.
Right, so Mac is like buying an expensive commercial printer. It costs a fortune up front, but it just works reliably and it holds its value.
Okay, what about Windows then?
Windows presents a much more insidious financial curve. The 3-year TCO lands around $1,200. You can easily purchase a capable Windows laptop for $499 up front.
So it's cheap to get in.
Cheap to get in. It's the cheap inkjet printer, but they price gouge you on the ink. The bulk of the cost is obscured in recurring ecosystem fees. You have Microsoft 365 subscriptions required to unlock core productivity features, heavy cloud storage fees, and the reality of racket hardware obsolescence driven by all those shifting AI requirements.
Right, the 40 TOPS NPU requirement.
Exactly. And then we look at Linux, sitting at a staggering 3-year TCO of just $600.
Half the price of Windows.
Because the operating system kernel and virtually all of its core applications are distributed entirely free of charge, there are zero mandatory vendor subscriptions. More importantly, it can run efficiently on virtually any hardware configuration.
So Linux is like building your own printing press from spare parts.
Exactly. And this financial disparity connects directly to the environmental footprint of these operating systems.
The sustainability aspect is fascinating because the mechanism of e-waste is largely driven by software dictating hardware utility. Microsoft's aggressive push toward localized AI with Windows 12 systematically dropped support for millions of PCs that were only 5 to 7 years old.
Perfectly functional processors and motherboards.
Rendered instantly obsolete for secure web browsing. It created a tidal wave of toxic electronic waste.
And Apple, you know, despite their highly publicized environmental marketing campaigns, they accelerate obsolescence through that physical soldering process. When a single memory chip fails on an M5 logic board, the entire motherboard often becomes scrap.
Right. Whereas Linux operates as the definitive sustainability champion here. Because the modular architecture allows you to strip away background processing, a lightweight Linux distribution can take a 12-year-old laptop destined for a landfill and turn it into a lightning-fast, highly secure daily driver.
It breathes life back into old hardware.
It really does. However, there is a critical vector where macOS 16 completely outclasses the competition, and we have to mention it.
Yeah, accessibility.
Built-in human accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
Apple engineers process complex accessibility tools like the voiceover screen reader, live captions, and advanced switch control directly through the silicon's neural engine.
So the integration is flawless the moment you open the box.
Exactly. Windows 12 has made substantial strides, but Linux suffers from deep community fragmentation here. Because Linux allows you to choose between dozens of different desktop interfaces, building a universal screen reader like Orca that works consistently across all of them is an incredibly difficult engineering challenge.
It's inconsistent.
Very.
While we've navigated the silicon architecture, the profound privacy implications of hybrid cloud AI, the mechanical realities of game translation, and the compounding costs of hardware obsolescence, the Tech and Army report distills all this data into a final recommendation matrix for 2026. Give us the breakdown.
All right. Based on rigorous benchmarking and architectural longevity, macOS 16 earns an 8.8 out of 10. They classify it as the perfectionist craftsman. It remains the definitive choice for creatives heavily reliant on rendering stability, developers locked into the iOS ecosystem, and users who demand exceptional battery life intertwined with seamless out-of-the-box accessibility.
Okay, and Windows.
Windows 12 secures an 8.3 out of 10, labeled the all-purpose powerhouse. If your livelihood depends on deep Microsoft Office integration, or you are locked into kernel-level anti-cheat for competitive gaming, Windows remains an inescapable gravity well. You basically accept the telemetry and the hardware requirements for the sake of absolute ubiquity.
Which brings us to the highest score.
Yep. Linux takes a 9.3 out of 10, designated the Freedom Revolution. For users who prioritize transparent data security, raw compilation speed, deep-level DevOps architecture, and the ability to dictate exactly what their hardware is executing, Linux stands alone.
So what does this all mean for you? You understand the mechanics now. You know how the memory is accessed. You know how the compatibility layers translate code. And you understand severe security implications of an operating system that records your every keystroke. But the source material leaves us with a fascinating prediction targeting the year 2030, a concept they refer to as convergence.
This is my favorite part of the paper. The architectural analysis suggests that these rigid boundaries between the systems are beginning to dissolve. To survive, Windows is heavily investing in modularity to shed legacy bloat. Apple is facing immense global regulatory pressure to open up its hardware and software ecosystems to third-party tools. And Linux, fueled by massive corporate investments from companies relying on its server dominance, is rapidly polishing its desktop interfaces to become commercially user-friendly.
Meaning, by 2030, the underlying mechanics of all three systems will look remarkably similar.
They'll borrow the best parts from each other.
Which leaves you with a deeply provocative thought to carry with you. We've spent this entire time analyzing how your choice of operating system defines your relationship with your computer. But if this convergence accelerates and localized AI models become seamlessly integrated into our daily workflows, will the concept of an operating system even exist 5 years from now?
That's the real question.
Right. Or will the traditional desktop, you know, the files, the folders, the taskbars, will they fade completely into the background, becoming a silent, invisible engine while we interface exclusively with a personal AI agent? The war we just broke down might actually be the final battle for the desktop as we know it. We highly recommend grabbing a USB drive, flashing a live version of Linux, or heading to a store to physically test these ecosystems while the battle lines are still drawn. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the architecture of tomorrow. Catch you next time.